This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Will Friedle, the voice of the future Dark Knight, Batman Beyond.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
In the year 2039, Gotham City has no heroes. Its people, no hope. Its youth, no future.
Evening, boys and girls, who's up for some laughs?
Terry McGinnis was part of the problem.
You can't control your temper, and you'd better if you expect to get anywhere in life.
Yeah, I'll be a big success, just like you.
Until a moment of violence brought him to the door of a man named Bruce Wayne.
Let's put a smile on his face.
Leave him alone. Once known as the Batman.
Man, you're something. You okay?
Now, the Dark Knight will rise again to drive the shadow of evil from the streets of Gotham. Let's go! Supervillains, beware! There's a new Batman in town. Batman Beyond.
You're pretty strong for some clown who thinks he's Batman.
I am Batman.
Justice returns to Gotham. Welcome to my world.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 292 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media accounts, it's Liam. Liam, we are officially kicking off our first review of the year 2024, at least at the time of original recording here, but we are starting off with a bit of a celebration as we head all the way to the future.
The future, Cal?
That's right. 50 years from now, whenever now is, we are celebrating our brand new year with a start with, of course, Batman Beyond. We will be reviewing Batman Beyond all month long, and we'll be celebrating its anniversary all year long, the 25th anniversary, that is. Man, we're all very old, Liam. I hate to break it to you, but we are reviewing this week a very memorable and interesting episode, to say the least. Probably one of the more memorable episodes, if I dare say so.
Absolutely. This is a this is kind of an all-timer as far as connections to the overall DCAU, specifically to the original Batman the Animated Series, and it's just a darn fine episode of television, if I don't not to spoil my review, but yeah, a lot to talk about with this week's episode, Out of the Past.
That is right, Liam. And before, of course, we get to this week's review, we, of course, remind our listeners at home that if you would like to support the podcast, one of the best ways to do so is to leave a review on your favorite podcast app. So if you listen to us on Apple or Spotify, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts and leave a nice little blurb with 5 stars, we'll, and you live in the continental United States, we'll send you a little thank you gift. So make sure, if you haven't done so, you kick the year off right by doing that. And Liam, we are about to start with our official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which you will deliver, of course, as you always do, in just a moment. For this episode, which originally debuted on October the 21st, 2000, meaning we are coming up here on the 24-year anniversary in a few months of this episode's original airing here in the States on the Kids WB programming block. But of course, this official synopsis is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today and subscribe, and you can get a trio of great podcasts all in one convenient YouTube platform, that being youtube.com/The Pod Tower. Not only do you get our awesome podcast, but you get the fine folks at Tim Talk as well as the Jump on the Batwagon podcast from the fine folks at the Watchtower Database. All of that in one convenient spot. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower and subscribe today.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Out of the Past, which is written by Paul Dini, directed by James Tucker, music by Shirley Walker, and animation by Coco and Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. Talia arrives in Gotham claiming she has mastered the Lazarus Pit and offers to use it to restore Bruce's youth without any side effects. But all is not as it seems.
I don't remember the part where she said there's no side effects.
No, there very clearly are side effects.
In fact, that's like the first thing that she says. While the side effects are reduced, the side effects are...
She does say she's perfected the pit at one point, as we'll get to. But
Yeah, factual
claim, no.
Yeah, I was saying it hung up on that infactual statement there. So see us after class, IMDb synopsis author.
That's right. But jumping into the plot here, well, we start out with, and we'll be certainly talking about this in a few categories later, we start out at a Batman musical that that Terry has taken Bruce to, with very over-the-top garish costumes and dancing and singing and all of the things you would expect. A Batman Broadway play, if you will, here in Gotham. And Terry is having a great time, but Bruce, not so much.
You hate me, don't you?
Lighten up, it's your birthday.
Don't remind me.
Good work, Cape Crusader. Once again, you've saved our fair city from those vile miscreants.
They were no problem, Commissioner. For as we all know, criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot. They plan and plot, but they always get caught. Their evil schemes all come to naught. A superstitious, cowardly lot.
It took me weeks to get tickets for this show. It's Shway.
It's Schwarbage. Excuse me. One side, please. Move!
A superstitious, cowardly lot. They plan and plot, but they always get caught. Their evil schemes all come to naught. A superstitious...
We find out pretty quickly that it's Bruce's birthday and that Terry has sort of taken him out on the town trying to cheer him up, give him a nice night on the town, but Bruce pretty quickly decides he's not interested and gets up and leaves and heads back to the Batcave, where we see him doing a little reminiscing, and we get a little walk down memory lane as we see him looking at pictures of Zatanna, pictures of Lois Lane, pictures of Catwoman, as well as a couple of pictures of Barbara Gordon. Those are both Barbara, by the way. I guess there was some confusion that one of them was Andrea Beaumont, but they are both Barbara. Mm-hmm. But as he continues to look at those pictures, we hear a voice coming into the room. Ace, actually, I think, notices someone in the Batcave first, and we quickly hear a voice and someone asking Bruce why exactly there isn't any pictures of her in his little photo montage, and we turn around to see none other then the daughter of the demon herself, Talia, has returned. And as we establish, she has a bit of a proposal for Bruce.
Happy birthday, Bruce. Roast pheasant with truffle risotto. Just like we shared in that little bistro in Milan.
I can't eat that anymore.
I'm sorry, I didn't think.
It's been years, Talia. It seems the Lazarus Pit agrees with you.
Time has not tempered your sarcasm, beloved. My father used the Lazarus Pit as a crutch. It is a gift, Bruce. One which must be used wisely. A gift I would now share with you.
A superstitious, cowardly lot. You missed a great show.
That's right. Yeah, she offers him the use of the aforementioned Lazarus Pit. She doesn't say there's no side effects, but she does mention that she has perfected it. And Bruce surmises, based on her appearance, that she had taken notes from her father, who she admits has passed on, but that he had left her the keys sort of to the Lazarus pits. And she wants to offer that same Lazarus pit to Bruce to use to restore some of his youth. Bruce, of course, being the noble man that he is, declines and says that he's really not interested. At this point, Terry walks in singing A Superstitious Cowardly Lot, which is one of the songs sung during the incredible performances of the Batman musical. And he's all caught up on who Talia is, mentioning that he does mispronounce several times Ra's al Ghul's name, calling him Ra's, which I thought was a funny bit because that's clearly something that Christopher Nolan didn't do his homework on, and has been, I guess, quite the debate between Batman fans over the years of whether or not it's Ra's or Ra's. But
yeah, I think we may have even discussed this on episodes past, but I think if you were going with the actual Arabic pronunciation of the name, it probably is closer to Ra's or Ra's, but the person who created the character, or the writer who created the character, along with Neil Adams, the artist, Denny O'Neill, always called him Ra's. And that's where I believe the producers and people that worked on this show got that pronunciation. So I'll go with the creator's word on this one.
That's correct. It's a fictional character, and it doesn't have to be based in reality. It's all based. We revert back to, as you said, the person that created it, and friend of the show, Kevin Altieri, also confirmed very adamantly that it is Ra's, not Ra's, on one of his appearances on our program. But yes, Terry knows all about who Ra's was and who Talia is, and kind of leaves her somewhat impressed. She mentions that she was aware that Terry was likely the man under the bat mask based on his proximity to Bruce. But again, she reiterates that she's offering the gift to Bruce, but Bruce again declines. But she mentions that she'll be staying at the Gotham Plaza for the next day or so in case he changes his mind. And I guess off screen, we get a conversation just what this gift was as Terry kind of pries it out of Bruce. And we cut to Hamilton High, where Terry is sharing the information about this eternal youth hack to Max, who is absolutely floored about it. In the conversation, Terry also has mentioned the side effects that go along with it. And he mentions that Bruce can tell that Bruce misses being in the bat suit, and Max asks him if he's worried that if Bruce were to use the Lazarus pit, if he would take back the cowl, so to speak. And Terry is somewhat worried, but I don't think he fully understood before Max brings this up, so he kind of comes to grips with this in that moment. We cut back to Bruce, who is out on the road driving in heavy traffic on a highway. I guess he's decided, based on having a change of heart, heading back to see Talia. And on the way there, wouldn't you know it, just by accident, his car tire blows out, leaving him stranded on the side of the road. He sends a distress beacon back to the Bat Cave. Terry still isn't home just yet, but he begins to get out, attempting to change the tire. And of course, this is still Gotham. So as he begins changing the tire, he begins to be harassed by a group of ne'er-do-wells that are up to no good.
Caught trouble, old-timer?
I can manage.
We'll be happy to call roadside service. Davey, help Grandpa find his car.
Keep away from me, you old freak!
Let her go.
You want her? You catch her.
They look like they're going to shake Bruce down and potentially rough him up a little bit. But of course, this is still Bruce Wayne. He may be elderly, but he still has the moves, so to speak. So he he does away with these folks pretty easily. But just as one of them is escaping, very similar to what we saw Bruce, why he took off the bat suit to begin with. He's not able to step between the criminal and a hostage that he takes. He grabs a bystander and begins holding her, threatening her, and Bruce tells him to let her go, and as he does so, literally throwing her into the middle of the highway, Bruce does his best to run out and save her. But again, it is high traffic. It's like a nonstop racetrack essentially going on there. So he's able to get in front of her and protect her, but there is a gigantic 18-wheeler that's pulling up, and appears that it's going to crush both of them, if not for Batman swooping in at the very last second, who mentions that he got the distress beacon and was able to track him. But this is sort of the nail in the coffin, pun intended, for Bruce, as Bruce realizes, even years younger, as he has a conversation just a few years before this, he would have been able to get himself and this girl to safety on his own, and age is finally catching up with him. So it seems that he's decided to potentially take up Talia on her offer, since he finds himself in this predicament of losing the battle to Father Time.
Absolutely. So yeah, he explains that he just feels felt so useless in that moment that he is willing to take Talia up on her offer, as you said, and so they head off to Talia's estate on this mysterious island known as New Cuba, apparently. Not sure what happened to Old Cuba, but Bruce is still a little bit unsure, but Talia sort of tells him to relax, and as Terry and Bruce are sitting on the plane, kind of both uneasy, Talia tells Terry not to worry about Bruce taking the cowl back, as once he's reinvigorated, that he'll be working on developing the Wayne Enterprises philanthropic festivities around the world, and joining forces with Talia's own company. So with some of their concerns put at ease, they head to the island, and Bruce is put into the machine. It's a little bit more refined. They don't just have he doesn't just dive in like Bugs Bunny style anymore. There's a little bit more to it. They have this apparatus that they put him in to contain the how much he's exposed to the Lazarus pit, and as they pull him out and release him from the contraption, he's still a little bit out of it, though he does appear much younger and more muscular. He is still out of it and attempts to attack Terry, but Talia is quick to use a little gas device. It's like a little little wand, a little gas wand. I don't know what it is, but she squirts the gas on Bruce, and he's knocked unconscious. And Talia assures Terry that it's just a light side effect, and that it actually used to be much worse. Though Terry is not quite reassured by that. But as we cut to the next day, we see that Bruce is waking up, and he has had his youth restored, and he's not quite sure still what to make of it all, and he still feels like perhaps that it's cheating in some ways. But he does thank Talia for the gift, and Talia tries to assure him that the more treatments in the Lazarus pit he has, the more he'll be able to accept his fate, so to speak. And we cut to the gym where Terry and Bruce are working out together, and we see Bruce really is getting back to what he once was. He's doing gymnastics, he's lifting weights, he's doing CrossFit. Beyond invented CrossFit. But he feels that it's coming with a little bit too high of a price, and he feels like if he stays and continues these Lazarus Pit treatments, that he's not actually getting stronger. In some ways, he's making himself weaker.
Good morning, Bruce. You're looking well. I left in some gray. I thought it looked distinguished.
Like Raish.
Thank you for the miracle, Talia. Thank you for restoring my youth.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be ungrateful. It's just that this is so new.
I understand. It will take several more immersions before the rejuvenation truly sets in, but you will accept it all in time.
Wow. I always wondered what you were like at your peak. Now I have some idea.
Not quite at my peak, but certainly better than I've been capable of in years. The agility, the stamina, everything. It's all coming back to me.
Hey!
It's unnatural. A cheat.
But you're strong again.
No. If I stay here, I'll be weaker than ever.
I heard a noise, sir. Something wrong?
We're leaving.
Afraid that's not in the boss's plan, sir.
So they decide they're going to leave, but the big fella, who is the Ubu stand-in, Carter, arrives and isn't ready to let Bruce and Terry leave, even though they want to. So after a scuffle with him and some of Talia's other men, they're fighting through the hallways. We'll certainly talk more about this in visuals and in music probably as well. But as they continue the scuffle, one of the thugs is knocked into a big wooden door we see, and we hear the voice of one Ra's al Ghul, which is strange because we've been told he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So Bruce and Terry go barging into the room. Bruce kicks the door down and demands Talia tell him where Ra's is and that where the voice is coming from, only to reveal in an incredible twist that the person you see before you, though it may be in Talia's body, we are looking at none other than Ra's al Ghul, resurrected once again in his daughter's body. And Bruce and Terry are tased and knocked unconscious. And that sort of moves us into our final act, as Talia has Bruce all tied up and is ready to reveal her final plans, Talia/Ra's. and Terry is taken off to be dealt with. He's going to be thrown to the gators there's like a swamp right on the edge of this palatial estate that Ra's has, and Terry is able to defeat his captors and knocks one of them into the water and takes back his knapsack, which thankfully has the bat suit, which he's going to need as we get the full stakes of what's going on here, as we cut back to Ra's in Talia's body, explaining exactly what's going on to Bruce.
Yeah. I'm just going to refer to Talia as they now, because it's really two people, and I don't know what pronouns to proper. I don't know what proper pronouns to call them. So I'm just going to call them they. Yes, as Talia explains to Bruce what their plan is, they kind of break things down for them and reveal not only how Ra's continued to live in Talia's body. Bruce has already pretty much deduced that it was some sort of plan, and it all has to do with this computer and this contraption that Bruce is locked in.
I should have known you'd cheat death again, Ra's.
I don't cheat death, I master it. Though I assure you, this time my longevity comes at a price, most dear.
Talia.
I did indeed survive our last battle, but my body was broken far beyond the pit's powers to heal. In order to save my life, I called upon Talia to undertake the ultimate act of loyalty.
You sacrificed her. Your own daughter.
I did what I had to do. At the time, this computer could only imprint my thoughts and memories on a close genetic match. But now, this youthful form has served its purpose. I must move on to a new host body. Yours.
Sure, Ra's, why not? Anything to hold off the Grim Reaper another few seconds. I take it back. You don't cheat death. You whimper in fear of it.
Silence!
And you hit like a girl.
And it is something that transmits one's brainwaves from one body to the other. It's very 60s Batman. I'm just going to say that. It's very 60s Batman 66. There's two chairs, something about brainwaves being transmitted from one person's body to the other. And Bruce deduces very quickly that Talia was asked to make the quote ultimate sacrifice unquote in this case in order for Ra's to continue to cheat death. And as they reveal their plan for what exactly is going to happen, is now Bruce is going to be the new guinea pig, whereas before Ra's needed somebody with a close DNA match in order to swap brains or swap brain waves or take over the body. In this case, they no longer need a DNA match. So what his plan or their plan is going to be now is to do the brain wave push into Bruce's body and then go back to Gotham, talk to the board of directors and declare himself the long lost son of Talia and Bruce. Stop me if you've heard that one before. The son, long lost son of Talia and Bruce, mm-hmm. and he'll have the DNA to back it up. So the
son of Batman, that'll never work.
Yeah. No, that would never fly. No one would ever accept that. But let alone from Talia. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. That's the plan. And he straps Bruce in. Bruce continues to taunt him, and he mentions that maybe my favorite line in the entire episode. He says he initially says that Ra's cheated death again by doing this brain swap, but then he says no, I was wrong. You don't cheat death, you cower in fear of it. Mm-hmm. And it's a really damning quote, because Talia then smacks Bruce across the face, and he comes back with, "And you hit like a girl," which is a great line, also a great follow up to that. But Bruce is locked in, and it seems that Talia's plan is going forward, and that Bruce is all but done for. But of course, breaking in at the last second and stopping the machine from doing its bidding, cutting off the wires that were about to do the transfer, is Batman himself. And Terry and Talia do battle with hand-to-hand fisticuffs. I don't know if this, I guess because it's Ra's brain, they have the same, they have like the training and the physical thoughts and Talia, mm-hmm. it's just Talia's body. So I guess it's all of the centuries of knowledge that Ra's has gained in hand-to-hand combat in Talia's body. So it seems like a formidable opponent for Batman at this point. But they go back and forth, and there's Terry, of course, eventually gets the upper hand as he catches Ra's Talia's sword. Of course, there's a sword involved. He goes back to his old mm-hmm. old crutch with a sword, and he flings the sword into the control panel. You know, you would think that Ra's would learn to keep swords away from computers, you know? He was outdone by this
first time.
He was outdone by this, if you remember, in the Demon's Quest, with Batman throwing a sword into the computer and destroying his satellites, and then he's undone again here as he catches Ra's sword and he shoves it into the computer, causing it to not only electrocute Ra's but start a gigantic fire in the laboratory. And so Batman and Bruce pick up a now unconscious Talia and are running towards the exit when they regain consciousness and insist that they must go back. They escape from Batman and jump through the flames and hit some sort of button that causes like a fire extinguishers to come down from the ceiling, putting out the fire. So it seems all is well, and Talia will continue on in their plan to seek a new host, a new better host, or perhaps fight another day. But at the last second, one of the electrical cords that had fallen off of the computer dips into the Lazarus pit, which was closely nearby. And as both Batman and Bruce are escaping this compound, a giant explosion happens behind them. Batman insists he's going to go back in to see if he can save Talia, but Bruce insists at that point that whatever is in there died a long time ago. And that kind of is the end of our little fisticuffs there. We do get a little bit of a postscript as Batman is back in the Batcave, getting more gray every day and noting that the effects of the Lazarus Pit are about to wear off.
More gray hair today.
I'm not crying. Within a week, I should be back to normal.
I'm sorry I never met her. The real Talia.
She was a very special woman.
The special woman?
You going on patrol sometime tonight?
See you in the morning.
Rest well, beloved.
And that's where we end this week's episode, Liam.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of stuff here, obviously.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff to talk about. It's as far as the plot is concerned, it starts off very much like you would expect a Paul Dini episode to go. It's a little bit goofy, it's a little bit wacky. We get this full, you know, Batman musical, which according to various wikis and interviews, is there was talk of in real life of a Batman musical at the time, and Paul Dini pitched this idea to Bruce Timm of having the lyrics that he wrote. Paul Dini wrote the lyrics to the Superstitious and Cowardly Lot song, and apparently had Bruce Timm in stitches, and they liked it so much that when this story was pitched, that was going to be the opening scene to really establish that Bruce was getting up in age and really kind of getting crotchety in his old age and feeling the effects of his age as he's sitting there watching this terrible Batman musical. But that's great. And then we get a return of a well-established character. We get some further homages to past things with the pictures of Lois and Barbara and Selina and a couple of people, you know, nowadays people would nitpick that. I think one of the things that you mentioned, Andrea not being included in there, has been asked several times as to why she wasn't. And the creators had a pretty good retort of, well, she turned into a murderer, so he's not really pining after her anymore.
Yeah,
which I guess is fair. Yeah, after all, we learned a lot about her last month.
That's true.
But and then, you know, we get this weird sort of wacky reveal. And I remember when we watched this as a child, just being absolutely mind blown that of the reveal of Talia as Ra's. Like it was absolutely crazy. But you also get some great stuff in this where Bruce and Terry get to team up and do some fisticuffs, as you mentioned, battle some goons. And we get some Bruce in action, which you don't always get to see. But it's still Batman. It's still Terry Batman's show. So he saves the day at the end and saves Bruce's bacon. And it's a lot of fun, I think, from start to finish. It is, I think, if you sit and think about it too much, like, how did this computer move Ra's brainwaves into her head, and why is he speaking like her? I saw that too, that was originally in the script, that they were going to explain like a vocal cord transplant or something like that was how, but they ended up cutting it because it was sort of unnecessary. I still wonder. is he like Batman? He's like a master ventriloquist where he can change his voice and impersonate people.
Here's a little headcanoning I want to throw at you. We know, for instance, yes, people like Superman, we know, has precise muscle control, therefore can replicate anyone's voice. The little things that go into the plug on Bruce's head when he's going to transfer the brain into Bruce's body, it's three circles. Is this Brainiac LexCorp technology?
Maybe.
And if so, are there it could be nanites, is what I'm saying. The answer could always be nanotechnology. I just want to remind you.
Dang, you got me again with those nanites.
There's always the chance that nanites or nanotechnology or the Darkheart or Brainiac are behind whatever doesn't make sense in a show when it comes to the DCAU.
You got me again. You got me there. I think also my headcanon is somewhere in his centuries of life, Ra's crossed paths with a great vocal impersonator, somebody like a comedian that could impersonate people, and he just decided to take it up as a hobby one day.
Yeah,
so that's
he's been alive for like a eight hundred years or whatever he says. So right. He's had time.
Yeah, sure.
You can't be a one hobby guy. You can't do just sword fighting.
Just sword fighting or just genocide. It's not
right. Just for 800 years. You gotta take a vacation once in a while.
That's right. But anyway, back to this. I think it is a Bruce-centric story without making Bruce the hero, because Terry still gets to save the day at the end. It is an interesting idea of what would happen if suddenly Bruce was younger. What would happen? You don't really get to flesh out the whole idea of Terry coming to grips of, well, what happens if he does have this throwaway line where he says, "I'm not putting on the Robin suit," which I liked. So he's not going to take a sidekick position. But really, what would happen in that situation? What would he do? Would he just be relegated back to being Terry? He would lose a part of his identity, but obviously we don't really get that fleshed out too much. But I also just offhand, how was Bruce going to explain his youthful look to the board of directors when he returned to Gotham if he went through with this resurgence here?
I guess it would have to be like he went off to a plastic, like one of those plastic surgery islands, because it's not just that his hair turns colors, that's fine, like he's standing upright and his jawline changes.
he's suddenly a ripped bodybuilder.
Might need to come up.
I think there would have been some questions, and the stock price might have fluctuated a little
again,
bit.
Nanites. He spliced a big buff guy into his DNA. I don't know.
Too much. Tweet at us or send us a DM if you have any thoughts on your headcanon of how Bruce would have handled this with the board of directors at Wayne Powers. Mm-hmm. But Liam, I mean, overall, there's a lot more that we'll talk about, both in visuals and music and voice acting, that makes this episode really, really great. But the plot, while not perfect, there are certainly some things where if you think about them too hard, it's like, eh. But also, this is a comic book. I love bringing back, if you're going to bring back somebody from the original show other than the Joker, of course, you should bring back the guy that's lived millennia. But doing that with a twist was a really unique and out of the box, I feel like, way of doing that. So I remember the first time we watched this was a twist I did not see coming. Thought maybe Ra's was actually still alive, but being inside Talia's body, I don't think was on anybody's bingo card the first watch. So for all those reasons, I ended up giving it a pretty strong 8 out of 10. What about you?
I went with a 10. Out of 10.
Wow, 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 wow.
I adore this episode. I think it ends up kind of being a celebration. It's funny, obviously, if we didn't mention this at the top of the show, this week marks 25 years since Batman Beyond debuted on the Kids WB network. And this episode feels like such a celebration of the original animated series and the character of this version of Bruce Wayne, from the wacky musical number at the start to, him looking pat over his past, loves in his life and kind of feeling like he's close to the end and feeling like he doesn't have much left to give. There's the scene when they're in the hotel room and Ra's Talia is talking to him about how he sacrificed everything for Gotham and he never got anything in return for it. And he tells her he was never looking for any reward. And I just think it's a really interesting look into Bruce, but that feeling that he's not done yet. The spirit is still there. It's kind of, you know, it's what drives him in other works where we see an older Bruce Wayne, like a Dark Knight Returns or something, where, you know, the body is weak, but the spirit is strong. It's not that he feels, you know, cheated by his life. He's proud of Batman. He's proud of that symbol, but he feels like he still has something to give, but his body is kind of giving out on him. And so I think getting Bruce to that vulnerable state where he would accept going into the Lazarus pit, even knowing what it did to Ra's and whoever else over the years, I think is really interesting. And the way they get him to that, which as it turns out, there's like a throwaway line that this was all part of the plot. His tire blowout and his, you know, being accosted by these thugs outside of the, or on the street was all part of Ra's plan, as it turns out. But I just think that's really interesting, and sort of what brings him down to his lowest point would have been, you know, letting an innocent person die when he feels like he could have stopped it. And so taking that and sort of the way that his vulnerability and his want to do more is weaponized against him and is almost costs him everything in the end is good. And I also think there's little bits of foreshadowing. They mention, when Ra's is pretending to be Talia, they say like, I just left a little gray on the temples. I thought it looked distinguished. And Bruce immediately is like, like Ra's. And then of course later we find out Ra's is trying to put himself in Bruce's body.
Yep.
Which is a really nice little bit of foreshadowing, I think, on a second or third viewing that you can pick up there. And then the finale there of Bruce and Terry fighting together. And yes, the brain swapping machine is very, very silly, very sci-fi. But again, it feels like if any character could have the resources to make this other than like Lex Luthor, it's Ra's.
Right.
So I kind of just took that and accepted it. And then that little epilogue we get in the cave at the end with him adding her picture to, you know, to his collage and sort of giving her a little eulogy, and you feel that little bit of sadness where he gets to say goodbye and gets to, you know, to remember her as a more heroic figure than she was perhaps before. So it's a really nice little sweet ending, and it just feels like a love letter to Bruce Wayne, specifically this version, you know, Kevin Conroy's Bruce Wayne, and where the character has been and where the character, you know, wants to still go, and that fire he still has to protect Gotham and protect the world and all of that. So I just love this episode for that. And then, yeah, it's just fun. It's fun when Bruce and Terry team up and kick butt together. It's fun that there's a Batman musical and everybody's dancing around and Bruce is miserable. And, you know, there's a lot of funny little lines, like you said, about Terry talking about the Robin suit and stuff like that. So there's just a lot of great little flourishes in there that lets you know it's a Paul Dini script. And it was, they talked about it, because obviously whoever's name is on as the writer isn't always the one who solely comes up with the idea. They're the one that, you know, puts pen to paper. That's why sometimes you'll see like a story by credit or something. Mm-hmm. But they did mention there's a little featurette on the DVDs and Blu-rays where it was Paul Dini's idea, I guess, even going back to his original outline, that the twist that Ra's and was in Talia's body was kind of always in his script from the beginning. So that's just such a brilliant moment as well, and such a great reveal. So yeah, for all those reasons, I ended up giving it the perfect 10 out of 10.
There you go. I love all those reasons. You make a compelling argument for a perfect score there. So love that. Our first perfect score of the new year. Way to go. We'll see if we have any more coming up here, William, as we move on to our animation and visuals department here. And forgive me, I did not write down who did the animation. Who did animation this week?
We have Coco and Dong Yang, and of course, the great James Tucker as our director for the episode.
Absolutely. Tucker and Dini. Those guys might have a future in this industry, I think.
A little bit.
Yeah, I'd say so. What did, you know, obviously there's lots of Lots of, but not, I feel like, to the point of, hey, remember this, homages mm-hmm. in it. So we get some callbacks, obviously, right off the bat as Bruce is going through his photos. And so we see callbacks to, as we already mentioned, Lois and Zatanna and Catwoman and Barbara. But I don't feel like everything, and obviously there are events that are alluded to, but it's not like, remember this, remember this, remember this, this was awesome. There's a lot talked about, and there's certainly stuff that where if you know, you know, but that's kind of left at a minimum, which nowadays, my minor critique on all of the fan service is that usually it's bashes you over the head with remember this to the point where you're just like, yes, I remember. We all remember. as opposed to this where it's like, hey, we're alluding to this. So if you're interested, if you know, you know. But if not, you know, that's okay too. So I appreciated that. I think overall the idea. So this is the first time that you and I have covered an episode on this show with the new Batman Adventures version of Talia. So, bringing her into this style, it's the more streamlined version of this character. Looks a little bit different than she did the last time we saw her, obviously, in the animated series, but you can tell who it's supposed to be. They even give her, I feel like, a similar outfit that she wore, putting her in a similar, that black jumpsuit at the end is very similar to what I remember her wearing. Also, so you're keeping the character similar, doesn't show too much signs of age. The Ra's statue and paintings and stuff seem to be on brand and model for what I remember Ra's mm-hmm. looking like also from the animated series. So, you know, in those situations, who that is. But the main things that stick out, the musical at the beginning.
Yes.
So
all character designs by James Tucker, by the way, all of the musical Batman and the Catwoman who looks like she's right out of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cats and all of the over the top, the classic, 1940s Robin with the short shorts and the pixie boots and all that. Just incredible work by Mr. Tucker on those designs. They're great.
So we'll go through there. It's Batman, the Joker, Two-Face, Harley Penguin, I think is mm-hmm. in there too.
Yeah, there's a very DeVito-looking penguin.
We get Poison Ivy also, and then I think that's all the villains. And then we also get Commissioner Gordon, obviously Batman and Robin, as you already mentioned it, also featured there. So all of those look like, if you imagine, if you have seen a Broadway show or are a fan of Broadway shows, it fits very well with what you would assume if somebody was tasked with adapting a Batman musical and didn't want to stray away from the classic Batman look. It would, while also keeping the brand, there's enough here where it feels like, yeah, this would be what a Batman musical would look like. And
it is, there's a very, the very first shot of the episode is what appears to be a just like classic archetypal new adventure, TNBA Batman in silhouette as he's doing the classic, as we'll get to, the classic Kevin Conroy, I am vengeance, I am the night. And then all of a sudden the lights turn on and it's this sort of, chubby guy in thigh high boots and a pointy chin prancing about the stage with a Robin in pixie boots. It's a great transition there that he did with the lighting and everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we get two musical numbers, which we'll talk about in our next bit there. But the fact that they did the one and then they cut back to the stage, just a lot of fun. Bruce's frustration and irritation as he gets up and moves out of the the audience. Also loved that. And
some cool silhouette stuff in that bit. Yeah. And then later when Bruce and Talia are in the bedroom in front of the window, they do some really cool, like it feels like very Eastern animation influence, like silhouettes with like very thick, like red lines around the silhouettes. It's really cool.
Yeah, I had noted the silhouettes in the bedroom as well. So, yeah, that's that is something that kind of stuck out as visual. I think the scene where Terry is about to be thrown to the crocodiles but manages to escape. There are some production inconsistencies here, as we will talk about. One of the DCAU wiki's favorite categories. There are some hands that have thumbs backwards apparently on them. There are some words, some classic words that are misspelled on some signs nothing over the top egregious. Oh, although other than the thumbs, that's pretty irredeemable. Backwards thumbs on hands is not something you want to see not something you're typically used to in a DCAU production. But looking past that, I like Bruce's transformation, the model for what they did. Mm-hmm. For not going all the way young, as we talked about, doing the straight TNBA look. It's younger than we saw Bruce in Rebirth, so he doesn't have the full gray hair. So it's kind of like this medium look that we would get for an era where we didn't know what Bruce would look like. So it's kind of got like the Mr. Fantastic or Nick Fury, the original Nick Fury design, mm-hmm. with the gray temples. And as we mentioned, that was done on purpose as a little foreshadowing. But he does have the big barrel chest that you were used to from the TNBA design. And the shot of him and Terry sort of running down the hallway, that's probably the other thing worth mentioning and discussing, is they kind of nod, look at each other. He offers Terry to go first, and they run down this hall and go through this run the gamut through this trench run of goons down this hallway. It's a lot of fun. It's something maybe you pinch yourself, you're like, man, I didn't think I'd ever get to see Bruce and Terry fighting together, but you do in this episode. It's a big what if question answered there, as master and apprentice, or spoiler alert, father and son, work together to take down a series of bad guys. There are lots of fun in that little fight scene there, Liam.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like you said, seeing Bruce and Terry team up in that sequence is so fun. Like, they keep breaking Raish's paintings. There's like three different shots where a guy gets thrown into a painting and it like cracks in half. I don't know if that was an intentional gag or if it's just like that's what's on the walls and guys keep getting thrown into the walls, but it happens two or three times. So I enjoyed that bit as well. And I really like the design for Carter, like I said, the kind of the Ubu stand-in. Mm-hmm. For a second I'm like, is he gonna be like a, because he's dressed like a Victorian vampire. Like he's giant and he's got this coat and tails with this like, you know, ruffly shirt on. He's not really dressed in the way that we've seen like you know, rich people in Batman Beyond dress, but maybe right. That works for, you know, a henchman of Ra's wouldn't necessarily be dressed in the current fashion.
I was gonna say, maybe Ra's just has like a closet full of clothes from his centuries of living, and he found this guy on the street and he was like, you're going to wear these clothes going forward.
I love that idea. He's got hand-me-downs from whoever his like 17th century
right
Ubu was, and he's just like, ah, yeah, this guy's about 6'6" and 240. He can fit
right.
in that.
Right.
Get it out of storage. But yeah, I love that design. The bit where Terry runs up and starts clocking him, and he just, you know, and then grabs him by the throat is great. And then Terry kind of turning that around on him when Terry, it should be noted for posterity's sake, remembers he can turn invisible in this episode.
That's true.
Very important part of this episode. Where we just see Carter getting knocked around by an invisible force. And then when Terry turns visible, he's literally like choking him. He's strangling him, which kind of plays off of what Carter was doing to Terry in the earlier scene. But yeah, I love that design. That whole fight scene is great. The final bit in there, there's something they kind of mention. And apparently James Tucker boarded that whole last sequence with Ra's/Talia versus Terry and Bruce, and mentioned that they thought it was kind of quirky and fun idea that Ra's is such a perfectionist that he moves like Talia, like he moves like like a in a very feminine way. Like his hips kind of wag when he walks, and he's got very like dainty steps. Like he doesn't. It's not like his posture doesn't change once he reveals that it's Raish. So they thought that was kind of be a fun idea to play with him being such a perfectionist that muscle memory is kind of still there even once he's not doing the charade anymore. So that whole final fight with her they slicing up the bat suit a little bit with the sword, and then the single coolest shot I think in the episode is where she's getting electrocuted, and just for like two frames it flashes Raish and then back to Talia is one of those cool tricks they would float in there once in a while. I think that final sequence has a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that Bruce, I don't think we talked about this in plot, but Bruce decides, hey, I don't really want to know whether or not they survived this blast, so let's just walk away from this burning castle. I think the quiet moments also really add to what kind of the point that you were talking about is sort of the homage or love letter to this version of Bruce. Like you get that the opening bit where he's going through the pictures, and then it's kind of bookended where he's really no longer wistfully wanting his youth. He's kind of bidding he's accepted and bidding his youth adieu in that moment. A bittersweet moment for him, but the quiet that he gets to sit in both of those moments is pretty great too. So love the visuals of it. It's a very like the only thing that I thought was a little bit odd is some of the color choices, and maybe it's just the beyond setting. Things tended to be a little bit like cooler tones, but I'm used to the Raish episodes being set in the deserts where there's lots of reds and oranges and obviously when they're underground and in the Lazarus pits in the episode, there is obviously a snow scene and they're underground where it's darker, but this was felt abnormally cool because of how much time is spent both in the Bat Cave and then indoors, and then it just felt like a very odd setting that we didn't get like a sand sequence or someplace out in the desert with on a Raish episode. So that was a little bit odd to me with all the episodes that we've covered, but that's it didn't affect my score at all, just something I noticed. But overall, Liam, for this episode, a lot of great stuff. I didn't think anybody looked too terribly off model, maybe a couple of tenths of a point off for our backwards thumbs and misspellings that weren't caught, but overall I really liked the episode. I ended up giving it a 9 out of 10 for our visuals here.
Yeah, I went 8 out of 10. Just some minor things that else that I noticed. I do think it's a really strong episode. One thing that I noticed was with Bruce's hair when he's in the gym, when he's disheveled, he's got like these two little pieces that hang down on his face or on his forehead, like his little bangs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered about that because I think it's in Star-Crossed. When he's out of costume, he has that. And I'm like, I don't remember TNBA Bruce ever having that. So I guess, so I wonder, is this where like the idea of like, well, that's what his hair looks like when it's like a little disheveled.
I like that.
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember that ever happening in TNBA. We'll find out, I guess, when we get there. And I don't really remember him ever having it in the original animated series, but he has that little bit of hair drooping down on his forehead in Star-Crossed, and I noticed that in this episode as well. So I was like, oh, that's a fun little bit of a visual language for him not being like suave, slicked back Bruce Wayne at this point. So there's some fun little things that I think are a lot of fun. I like the big purple sky with the big white moon as well in all of the jungle sequences with Terry getting attempted to be fed to the alligators and stuff off the pier after they're captured is cool too. So yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff, a lot of fun visuals in this one.
I liked Carl the Henchman's look too as a last thought there.
He's got cool glasses.
He does. He does. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which of course is going to be music. the late, great Shirley Walker gets credit for this episode's music. And again, right off the bat, we have lyrics penned, or at least partially penned, by our episode's writer, Paul Dini, which are homages to Detective Comics, where Batman describes villains as a superstitious and cowardly lot. So right off the bat there, and again, as we mentioned, this was Paul Dini coming up with this and pitching it to Bruce Timm, who thought it was hilarious, and then they kind of filed it away and found an opportunity to use it. And those were the opening lines to the episode. But of course, the actual opening line is "I am vengeance, I am the night." As you mentioned, it's visually looks like a TNBA Batman, only to be, of course, revealed as this cartoony, over the top production. But yeah, we get some songs sung by someone that sounds an awful lot like they were perfecting their Batman voice for our opening bit there. We get a lot of what I would say is some standard Beyond Fair kind of sandwiched in between. We do get a little bit. I identified it as what I believe to be the Ra's al Ghul theme, sort of put in. It's played both with electric guitar and also kind of out of key towards the end as the explosion happens, and sort of like a somber tone as they walk away from the explosion. But we do get some classic orchestral stuff that comes through, especially
when Talia first appears in the Batcave too. They kind of bring it in a little bit.
And the fight between Talia and Batman at the end, Terry Batman, is that's almost exclusively starts out as orchestral, and then they kind of, you know, some electric stuff is weaved in. But I'll let you talk about the piece for the entire episode.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the great, other than, as you mentioned, the songs, which we could talk a bit more about, because we have a choir that are our players. I'll actually mention them here rather than in voice acting, since for most of them, that's all they do in the episode. They don't actually provide any other additional voices. But yeah, the all-time great moment, we get it. We got a couple flourishes, as you mentioned, right at the start of Shirley Walker's classic Batman theme. But the moment it really kicks into gear is, as mentioned, Bruce and Terry, as they're trying to leave the facility and are accosted by Ra's thugs, they spring into action. There's this nice moment where they sort of look at each other and spring into action together. The first time they've ever really fought side by side.
Shall we?
After you.
We're out of here right now.
The Shirley Walker Batman theme kicks in a very Batman Beyond way, and in a way that's a little bit different than maybe previous times we've heard it in this show, even. We have heard the Shirley Walker Batman theme back in Disappearing Ink, for instance, or even back in the pilot episodes, Rebirths, but it's sort of been played. It was played a little bit differently here, but there it's just full, you know, you've got fast drums, rocked up electric guitar wailing of the Shirley Walker Batman theme as Terry and Bruce jump into action and tear through all of these thugs. It's one of the best musical moments, best utilizations of that theme. How hundreds of uses of that theme across all of these shows that we cover. This is on the short list for me as one of the best uses of that Batman theme, that Shirley Walker's Batman theme ever.
Wow. High praise, to borrow a colloquialism. it's good. It's really good. I got goosebumps when I was watching the episode. It's not something you hear very often in that, not only in this series, as you mentioned, here and there it was used. I think in Disappearing Ink, it was used almost for like a brief, like 10 seconds. Like it was not even like a full play through.
It's about as long as he's on offense when he's in the big robot suit.
Right.
Which is about, yeah, about 10 to 12 seconds before Ink kind of turns the tables on him. So
you don't really get to appreciate it. This is a little bit more extended. So it's great. And it's company.
It feels celebratory.
Yeah.
Like, it feels absolutely exciting. And it's like, oh my gosh, Bruce and Terry are fighting together. Batman and Batman are teaming up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the team up you never expected would probably be the tagline on the front Absolutely. Of the comic book. So, yeah, it's a really special moment, I think, especially for not only DCAU fans, but just like in the entire continuity of the DCAU, where you get to use this very important legendary piece of music. The person that composed it picked it for this spot, and of course it fits perfectly. Like, you know, yeah. I don't think that there's a better way to describe it. It's a perfect piece in the perfect spot with a perfect blending of the music styles. She could have very easily just gone with the orchestral version of it, and it would have felt, you know, just added some drums or something, and it probably would have felt fine also. But the fact that it sort of melded into the theme of the show and the usage of these electric guitars that were brought in to really create the sound of this particular series makes it all the more special, I feel like. So, you know, like I said, you get Raish's theme, you get some orchestral stuff, you get the stuff at the beginning with the musical, and those pieces are super fun and instantly hummable and memorable. But I think the thing, if you forget everything else, go watch this particular scene and tell us if you don't get goosebumps. Money back guarantee. Yeah. Not if you spend money on on buying the episode, but watch this scene for free on YouTube. Money back guarantee. Because it's special. And yeah, the music is, I dare say, perfect for this episode, which is why I ended up giving it a perfect 10 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, 10 out of 10 for me as well. Can't imagine giving it anything else just based off of that moment we just talked about. And of course, the songs at the beginning and some of the other mentions we had. But I will mention our cast of singers. We have BJ Ward, Steven Bernstein, who's actually the composer for the Animaniacs animated series and a bunch of other Warner Brothers animation. So fun to have him in there. Beth Howland and James Torsellini, who I think are both Broadway stage performers. Wow. And then rounding out our cast is Adrienne Barbeau. Catwoman is in the cast. She does not actually provide any other voices. There's no real Selena Kyle cameo in this episode, but she is here as one of the choir of voices. And of course, as you mentioned, Cal, Kevin Conroy himself singing the part of the theater's Batman, and a little taste of what would be to come years later in Justice League. This is the first time we really got to hear Kevin's beautiful singing voice in an episode. So,
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman.
Batman.
There is a song the good folks sing.
Song the good folks sing.
Batman, about a hero on the wing.
Hero on the wing. Batman.
I am Gotham's darkest night, the villain's darkest fright. Turn on the signal light
for Batman.
Batman.
For all those reasons, I feel like there was almost no choice from either of us but to give it perfect scores.
Yeah, agreed. It's really, really hard not to do that. But I guess stranger things have happened, but not today. All right, Liam, let's go ahead and move on to our final category for the day. And of course, that is going to be our list of voice actors. You covered our list of singers, but let's go ahead and break down this week's voice cast as we cover not a huge cast, but holy cow, when you look at the people that voiced this, it's not only, it's a who's who of DC animated universe voices that are in this cast.
No kidding. So I'll mention some of the smaller roles first. We do briefly as Cree Summer as Max for one scene, and voicing the Commissioner Gordon actor is Charles Kimbrough. People would probably know best from the Murphy Brown television series. He's in like 200 episodes of that.
Holy cow.
But yes, elsewhere in this cast, we have Gary Anthony Sturgis playing the thug that accosts Bruce Wayne. Of course, the voice of Ebon in Static Shock, and has done a bunch of other ancillary voices, but he kind of is doing the Ebon voice here. And I'm okay, headcanon immediately. My headcanon spider sense immediately went off. This is like Ebon's grandnephew or something. Like, this could be Rubber Band Man's grandson or something. We don't know. But like, I just immediately, I was like, well, it's his voice, and it kind of sounds like Ebon, and it's a guy with like cornrows. So I'm like, well, obviously.
Show us proof that it isn't.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I loved hearing him just in that brief voice. Got a kick out of that. And then yeah, some of our other, as you mentioned, Carl, the real skeevy guy who's about to throw Terry to the Gators. We have Michael Rosenbaum voicing Carl there, funnily enough. And of course, he had all he did some minor voices here and there. Obviously, he was also voicing Agent West on the Zeta Project by this point, and had done eventually would do Ghoul. I think Return of the Joker was out by then. We could check, but I'll just guess. Yell at me if I'm wrong. Engagement. Michael Rosenbaum as Carl. Of course, he had voiced Ghoul previously, but it's just a fun little quirky bit with him talking about how he likes watching the Gators eat their prey. Which I think is just a funny little bit to throw in there. And then speaking of which, a fellow by the name of Mark Hamill is playing our rough Cockney brute Carter. He's it's Mark Hamill doing this big burly Cockney accent, and it's just a hoot. Like, you can tell it's him, but it's also like, what is he doing in there?
Right, exactly.
What a fun idea to bring him in. And again, it also goes to what we've talked about how this episode as a whole feels like such a celebration of the original animated series and Bruce Wayne. So of course, Mark Hamill had to be in this episode in some role, even if the Joker was unavailable. So a very fun little bit to have him in there as the evil brute who's backing up Ra's.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think that it was like, once I saw the credits, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But I watched the entire episode, and it didn't dawn on me that it was him.
Yeah, I mean, he can, and that's something I know Mr. Hamill always talks about with voice roles, is that you can just slip into characters and in a way that you isn't really afforded to someone that has the fame at the level of Mark Hamill could never really achieve in live action. But here as a voice actor, he can slip into a, 7 foot tall, 300 pound angry British man. And it totally works. It's one of those ones. Yeah. If you're listening for it, I think you can hear it, but it's not immediately obvious, but yes. And then our dual roles as the villains of this episode, we have Olivia Hussey as Talia, who was not the original voice actor, had been recast, but did voice Talia in the Superman episode The Demon Reborn, which we have not yet covered on this show, but we'll get to sooner or later. She's really good. I think that her work, as we'll talk about, obviously the main event is Kevin and Will, but her work with Kevin Conroy, especially in the first half of the episode with them in the cave and then them and her apartment and her sort of making those emotional appeals to Bruce to that he deserves this second chance and that it's a way for him to kind of continue his mission is very good.
No, I agree. No, having come in, and even as you said, her playing this character once before, but still having to come in and attempt to have this chemistry that, or established chemistry that we're used to, because this is a character that supposedly has known Bruce for, you know, 50 years or whatever it's been. It would be important for her to establish that and make it believable. And I think that you can tell it's a recast, but I don't think it's based on the performance. It's simply because she sounds just a little bit different, but it's immediately believable that this is the same character to me. So it doesn't come across as distracting.
Agreed. And then, of course, we have the late, great David Warner returning for one final bow as Ra's al Ghul, although as mentioned in the body of Talia. It's such a great switch off, handoff from Miss Hussey to Mr. Warner in that scene where it's almost mid-sentence, where she goes, you know, I didn't want you to find out. And then we hear Mr. Warner say the word detective in that very familiar tone. And it's such a great shock. And I don't know if we talked about that in visuals, but Bruce's shocked reaction, it almost feels like a horror movie reveal.
Yeah, for sure.
Moment where he sort of recoils in horror as he hears the voice. And it's just, again, even though he's got to spew out a bunch of science mumbo jumbo about how the brain waves are going to change and all of that with the machine at the end, it's still one just great to hear him. And then there is that great back and forth again with him and Kevin Conroy where he's sort of, you know, trying to still keep up this air that he's, you know, oh, what a sacrifice it was, that, you know, a dear price I paid to stay alive. And, you know, Bruce just not having any of that sort of explanation, like, you're not sad that Talia is gone. Like you either forced her. It's also not really ever stated implicitly if she willingly did this or if he forced her to.
Right.
But based on the way it's sort of implied, I've always taken it as that he forced her to.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's
his character, it doesn't seem like that would be. He may have tricked her into it, but I doubt that she would have willingly sacrificed herself in that. Right.
Even going back to Miss Hussey's performance, there's a moment where she and Terry are talking and she kind of looks over at the statue and goes, oh, I think he'd like to be remembered most as a father. Mm-hmm. And it just feels so disingenuous knowing that, like, if that was what he wanted, he took his daughter's life.
Right.
And, you know, paraded her, you know, basically wore her as a skin suit for however many years. Like, it's the most, like, horrific and violating way to, you know, dishonor someone's memory of what he's done in the name of this, you know, supposedly holy mission that he's been on for however many hundreds of years. So, yeah, Mr. Warner and Kevin do get to have kind of one last verbal chess game in that final scene, which is a lot of fun.
No, absolutely. It's as we talked about the last time we did the Ra's episode with Showdown. It's sad that we didn't get one last sort of send off in the Justice League era. It would have been nice to see them kind of reunited and going toe to toe once again. But this is it is sort of a fitting end that we're not quite sure what happened to Ra's, but Bruce is sort of send off at the end of whatever was in there died a long time ago. And their verbal sparring back and forth, even though visually it kind of messes with your head seeing Talia with Ra's voice.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really unsettling. And Mr. Warner does a great job at that. But as we've kind of hinted around all night, we'll get to our main event, our two chief voice actors, of course, Will Friedle as Terry McGinnis in Batman gets a fair amount to do. He gets to sing as he mentions in one of the featurettes, that kind of gave him a little bit of anxiety going in to the episode, knowing that he had to sing a couple lines of the song. But they're like, no. And Andrea sort of calming him and letting him know, you're not actually supposed to sound like you're a good singer. Like, you're
right.
Just Terry, you know, humming the song as he comes back from the musical. But that's kind of a fun bit. And I think we see some of the maturity of Terry, and I mean, this is maybe more a plot point or whatever, but how much he's not in the suit in this episode and how well he handles himself. And he's kind of piecing things together almost before Bruce is, and you kind of see the growth in that character and his, in the way his mind works and his his suspicions, his own ability as a detective as it's improved. And you know, the scene where he's in the cave and he's kind of spouting off Talia's rap sheet to her, and you know kind of joking about how, you know, I take this stuff seriously, like I know exactly who you are. I think he's got some, even though it's very much, as we'll talk about in a moment, it's very much Bruce's episode at the end of the day, he still gets a lot of great moments. I know it's like, how many times can we talk about how great Will Friedle is as Batman, but he gets some nice moments here, even if he is kind of the best supporting actor this week.
How many times can we say it? As many times as we cover episodes, I'd say, because that's what we do on this show. We talk about how great the voice acting is and call it out for what's, I mean, it's what sets these shows apart from every other cartoon that still is out there, is that it not only included great stories, but you also had really, really fantastic voice acting a great portion of the time. So yeah, I agree with you. I think that I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of his struggle with the idea of having to relinquish the cowl, or if that was something that was on the table, and sort of his conflicting thoughts with what that would look like for him. But I agree wholeheartedly with you that this definitely feels like a more mature, and we're in season three. As we begin to wind down the episodes of Beyond, that's something that I feel like you really starts to shine through, is the maturity. This isn't the same character that we saw at the beginning on the rebirth episode. You know, it's not that same young kid who was naive or a troublemaker or all of the things that Terry McGinnis was at the start of the show. He's fully embraced the Batman role here and is learning, and he's learned from his mistakes and is kind of beginning to do 4D chess and think outside the box and learn to become Batman. So yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And Mr. Friedle's performance is a big part of that for this episode.
Absolutely. And then rounding it out, of course, you must talk about the legend that is Kevin Conroy as Batman, as Bruce Wayne in this episode. And it's something that I didn't necessarily think about until I watched that featurette, and Will Friedle mentions this, that this is the only episode of the series where Will got to work with him, where he's not doing the old gravelly Bruce Wayne voice. Once he goes in the Lazarus pit, he's much more doing his regular, you know, new Batman Adventures Batman voice. Mm-hmm. And it's not a tremendous change. It's just like he always speaks a little bit slower, and there's a bit more of a gravel to it when he's old Bruce Wayne. It's harder. I think it's harder to pick up. I mean, there's a scene later on in a Justice League episode, obviously, where young Batman and old Bruce Wayne talk to each other, and we can probably compare it better in that episode. But this is probably the best version of that we've ever seen of him getting to be that classic archetypal Batman one more time, and then also have to play the older Bruce Wayne struggling with his mortality, struggling with his, you know, with his own sense of his sense of duty, and his, you know, wanting to continue on and keep fighting when his body's kind of giving out on him. And as you mentioned, those very sort of like more somber, quiet moments towards the end of the episode when Terry's sort of asking him, you know, who was Talia to him? What did she mean to you? And, you know, he just says she was a very special woman, and sort of, you know, gives her this beautiful little eulogy where he tells her to rest and calls her beloved, which I think is that really got me, that when he says rest well, beloved, at the end. It's just wonderful. Grief hits you in waves, and it's weird to call a person you never met saying that you have grief, but
yeah,
no, listen, man.
Yeah.
And this is one of those episodes that really just, again, how many times can we talk about Kevin Conroy being great as an actor? As many times as we talk about him on this show. And this is one of his best performances ever, I think.
No, undoubtedly. Yeah, it's there's no, it's fun. Like you you sit back and you talk and you think about it as he gets to do this Bruce Wayne voice again, as you mentioned, we didn't mention this, but one of the things that's on the DCAU wiki is that they mentioned that in the original flip through of pictures, there was going to be a shot of the Justice League. Obviously, mm-hmm. this is before the Justice League show was in development or had been completed, but they axed it. So you don't know, he doesn't know that he's going to play a younger Bruce Wayne again. So this is kind of like he gets to saddle up one more time, and he gets to, not only does he get to do that, he gets to sing, which obviously he gets to do later on again in Justice League, but that's his real singing voice. And we've talked about that before. That's something that as a classically trained actor, you don't think about Batman having pipes to sing songs. there's a wonderful, we just obviously came through the holiday season, but there's a wonderful version of Silent Night that he did that's available. I think it's probably available. I've seen it on Twitter a whole bunch, and it's also, I'm sure, probably on YouTube and stuff like that, but worth checking out. Kevin Conroy could really sing. This seeing him in his element, getting to do this again, as you mentioned, sort of being a homage to the character that he very much put his creativity into to create and model and mold. And no matter which DCAU, director, actor, whoever you talk to about who Kevin was, they talk about his personification of the Batman just being something to behold when you hear it, when you see it in person, all of that. It's great that this episode sort of is a tribute to that, a fun tribute to it. And you get sort of he gets to show you these various different aspects of the Bruce Wayne. He gets to do the classic Bruce Wayne voice. He gets to do, sing. So he also gets to put more of Kevin Conroy in it too. So for all those reasons, I didn't have a choice but to give voice acting a perfect 10 out of 10 this week. It's great. He's great. The cast is great. Yeah, there's so much to enjoy out of this week's episode. Mr. Warner's great.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a real Hall of Fame cast. As mentioned, all of our singers and people who didn't even really do any other voices in the show but still contributed so much to that opening sequence. I didn't feel like I had much choice but to give voice acting a perfect 10 out of 10.
Awesome. All right, Liam. Well, that will begin to... Whoa! Oh. Hey! Kicking things off right with a new year with a bonus point. Liam, that must mean it is yours here as we kick things off. What'd you have down for a bonus point?
So my bonus point goes to... I guess this would be plot-related, but I gave plot a 10, so there was no further way to go. I think the twist... that Ra's in Talia's body is the best single narrative twist in any DCAU episode ever. It's the best twist in DCAU history. So I just thought it deserved an extra little flourish for a zig and a zag moment, for an I am your father. You thought you knew what was happening, and then the whole world changes in an instant moment. That's the best twist in the DCAU, at least that we've covered to date. So if there's a better one out there, I'd love to hear people's thoughts on that. Tweet us or send us a message on Instagram. But for my money, that's the best twist in DCAU history. So an extra tip of the cap to Paul Dini and Alan Burnett and the rest of the folks working on the story on this one.
Man, that is high praise. I love that. Best twist in DCAU history. You heard it here first, Liam's take on this episode. All right, Liam, well, that will begin to wrap us up. So let's go ahead and total things up here. Coming up with a final score here, I end up with a incredibly strong 37 out of 40. What about you?
and I am just a couple points higher. I ended up at a 39 out of 40.
Wow.
So that really puts this in rarefied air, kicking off the year with a heck of a start here.
A top pick to kick things off. You got to love that. 2024 is my year. I'm calling it now.
Love it. But yes, this is we barely even have to say anything when we talk about rewatchability. Double thumbs up. Great episode. Important to the show. Important to the overall DCAU as it ends up being the period, as you said, the final confrontation between Bruce and Ra's that we never got in the original animated series. Mm-hmm. And also kind of, as we said, this nice little, love letter to Bruce Wayne and Batman as a whole. So easiest double thumbs up of all time for rewatchability.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to try and argue or even I don't need to offer additional support because what you stated was a fact. All right, Liam. Well, that will begin to wrap us up for this week's episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, we would love your support for the podcast, and there are a myriad of ways to do so. The first, of course, is to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. As we talked about from the top, leaving 5-star reviews on podcast apps has never been easier than before. It is now. If you have a podcast app, it will usually just let you leave the review right through the app, right from the convenience of your phone. So if you want to do that, we would greatly appreciate a 5-star review. In fact, Liam, as we mentioned at the top, if you leave a 5-star review, we read it on the air, you're in the continental United States, we'll send you a little thank you gift just for taking the time to do so. And we have a new review on Apple Podcasts. Liam, with your best announcer voice, or not, you don't have to do it with announcer voice, whatever you want
to
do.
It's too long to do the announcer voice.
Take it away. Take it away with this brand new review found on Apple Podcasts.
Absolutely. So the headline, which kind of gets cut off, and I don't know how to see the whole headline on the Apple Podcast app. So, but it's the headline from More Than Mindless is the person who left the review. 5 stars, as mentioned, a great blend of opinions and history. There may be more to that. Apologies, it's cut off. But here is the actual blurb from the aforementioned More Than Mindless. Jonesing for a podcast where a few people talk about some of my favorite animated Batman movies, I was thrilled to discover the DCAU review on the last day of 2023. Hey, new listener.
What?
The Long Halloween Parts 1 and 2. Hey, I forgot we did those. Batman Beyond Return of the Joker and Mask of the Phantasm are all covered along with many more movies and series. There's a great blend of opinions, history, and audio clips. Great job, Cal and Liam. Well, that's about the nicest thing I've read all year.
That rules.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Love that somebody new has found the podcast. The 5 stars are working. Here's our evidence. A new person found our podcast. So, no, but thank you so much for leaving that. If you do hear this one and you, as we said, you can slide into our DMs on Twitter or Instagram, or, you can make it a public message, but usually, again, we're going to ask for your address to send you a little gift. So you probably want to do that privately. You can hit us up at DCAU Review on Instagram or Twitter/X and let us know. But either way, thank you so much for leaving that review. And as you mentioned, Cal, that's a great free way to help us, though there are a few monetary ways folks can support us as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those are, of course, if you would like to check out the show notes, 2 ways to do so there. You can become a monthly supporter of ours. We have a couple people that do that. They give their hard earned cash every single month and support us. You can choose any dollar amount and it helps us out. We appreciate it. And those that do support us monthly, you are loved and appreciated. You can also check out the link to our store. That's on my to-do list of 2024 is to add some new merchandise to our store. Some stuff that's related to both jokes we've made on the podcast and some of our favorite things. Towing the line of cease and desist every single day. Check it out. Check out the link in the show notes if you're interested in getting some merchandise. Also, if you listen on Spotify, you can also, back to that, you can also interact with us every single week with our poll of the week and our question of the week. So check that out as well. Subscribe to us on the Pod Tower as well if you want to listen to us and every episodes every Saturday morning on YouTube. Liam, we are continuing here with our month stay in the future. And you know what? Typically, recently, when we've been doing future months here in the DCAU review, we have unfortunately been subjecting our listeners to Zeta Project reviews. But you know what? I have made the executive decision that there will be no Zeta Project reviews this month. So fear not, fans. You don't have to skip next week's episode, as we will continue celebrating all month long with Batman Beyond. Although we have very little new reviews to do, we are going to continue next week, Liam, with the next episode in production order here.
That is right, Cal. And it's an episode, I'm going to be honest, I have no memory of. It is called Speak No Evil. There's a gorilla. I don't really remember what happens in it, so I am excited to follow along with the listeners and try to remember what this episode's about. So, yes, Speak No Evil coming up, a Dan Reba-directed episode, so I'm sure there will be plenty of good stuff to talk about when we bring that your way next week.
Absolutely, but until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.